We just can't quit Greg Peterson.
Nope.
He is an absolute betting monster. He's with VSiN and ESPN. He joins us now, courtesy of the Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. And Greg, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. Before we look ahead, I do quickly want to look back. What did you think of Maryland last night? What do you think of this Kevin Willard situation? Just your thoughts.
The whole Kevin Willard situation is just such a sticky situation. And you wish that college sports right now was a little bit different. You understand that the transfer portal and the way that teams have to go after coaches, it is what it is as of right now, because if you're not hiring on a coach right now, you're losing out on hundreds and hundreds of different transfers. But, man, I feel like there needs to be a better way of going about things. And, I mean, it's unfair for Villanova fans. It's unfair for Maryland fans. It's just a bad situation in general. And I don't think that Maryland was distracted by the game yesterday. I think that they just flat out ran out of gas because – they had a really good starting five. When you have nothing coming off the bench, trying to take down a team like Florida, that's just a difficult situation in general. So I don't think that what happened off the court really manifested itself on the court. I feel like Florida is one of the best teams in all of college basketball. But, man, you just wish that the situation was better involving Kevin Willard and all that happened.
What are your thoughts moving forward now, Duke, Alabama? Looks like there. I mean, it could be a race to 100, right? I mean, I jumped on that thing at like 165 right after the game. I woke up this morning, it was 174 and a half everywhere. Then I know it's come down a little bit, but could that be the track meet that it looks on its surface like it probably might be?
Some places open this as low as a 161 and a half, and that's just too low. Now, I take a look at the mid-170s, and I think that we're starting to go a little bit too far. Mm-hmm. We're starting to be a little bit of primitive at the moment, because Duke entering into that game on Thursday, it's actually third in the country in terms of points allowed per possession, and they're a little bit of a slower team. Like, Duke is, contrary to popular belief, under John Shire, actually playing a pretty slow brand of basketball. Meanwhile, Alabama, as we know, they're looking to gun it. There is nothing slow about Alabama. No. They're number one in the country in terms of total possessions per game, but I just can't see Alabama hitting 45 threes again. Like, if they do, and if I'm wrong, I will gladly take it, because I feel like that's the odds of lightning striking, them being able to hit 25 threes in back-to-back NCAA tournament games, especially with a spot in the Final Four on the line. And both of these teams are actually really good at guarding the three. Both of these teams are top 36 in the country, allowing their opponents to shoot less than 31% from three. So I think that both of these teams are going to be approaching 80. I think where it stops is once you start to get to 85 or so, I think that the defense is actually really good. I think that they'll hold down Alabama and find themselves in the Final Four.
Let's get to one of the games tonight. Michigan was in a tailspin at the end of the regular season, but they've been undefeated thus far in the postseason. They meet up against Auburn. What are your best bets in this one?
I was willing to play with Auburn. I was able to catch myself a -8.5. We're seeing a lot of -8.5, -9 out there. I'd be willing to lay it. I do think that Auburn, just a more dominant team. And with Michigan, the big fear with them is the turnovers. This team is outside the top 320 in terms of taking care of the ball, in terms of their overall turnovers. And I think that that's really going to be their undoing. They have an Auburn bunch that they do a really good job with their offense. Guys like Chad Baker, Mazzara, Taj Pettiford in the backcourt have all been guys that have shot north of 37.5% for three. They dish out the ball well. And then you got the size to be able to match up with Vladislav Golden, Danny Wolf down low. These you've got G&I Broomman under the radar. Though he doesn't score a lot, Dylan Cardwell, a very tremendous defender. So I do like laying it here with Auburn. I'm starting to see that total right around 155.5. Do think that those turnovers are costly to the over, so do like that under as well.
Talking to Greg Peterson's Inside Access here on the Fan. Purdue, Houston. Is Houston just going to run Purdue out of the building? Do you give Purdue a shot in this one?
I think that for Purdue, the fact that this is being played in the state of Indiana does help them out a little bit. I was willing to lay the opener of 8 with Houston. Wouldn't want to go any further than that, but I do take a look at this total of 134, and I do like this one under, because with Houston, they aren't going to run you out of the building. They're just going to grind you down. They are one of the slowest teams in all of college basketball. They're absolutely tenacious on the glass. And what I think is going to be the undoing of Purdue, they're outside the top 340 in opponents' two-point shooting percentage. They get gashed on the inside on defense. They do a really good job with Trey Kaufman Wren giving them 20 points per game, but they don't have any sort of interior defense. That should allow guys like Joseph Tugler, Juwan Roberts, to get their way down low. I think Houston is going to be able to win from within. And I do think that with this being played at Lucas Oil Stadium, which is a converted football stadium, that's really going to throw off the sight lines for both of these teams, which helps out that under.
I'm with you there, G-Unit, and I'm also looking at Sparty, and I've been riding Sparty unders quite a bit the last 3 or 4 weeks, and this kind of strikes me as another one where it might be Izzo's kind of rock fight.
Yep, absolutely, and there's a few things that you want to go up against when it comes to sports betting. Thomas O. March is certainly one of them, and with this Michigan State team, they have such a nice advantage on the Ole Miss. They're 318th in the country in terms of rebound percentage. Michigan State is number two. Michigan State has so many guys like Jackson Kaler, Simon Zapala, that do a rock-solid job down low. And for Ole Miss, other than Malik Dia, you don't have a single guy that gives you north of 5 rebounds per game. Ole Miss does a great job being able to win the turnover battle. They do a nice job taking care of the ball. They themselves don't turn the ball over a ton. But when you go up against a Michigan State team that's so rock-solid down low, and Michigan State, if the spread comes into question, they shoot north of 77% at the free throw line as a collective. I think that that'll be enough to be able to get the job done. So I'm willing to lay it here with Michigan State, and I'm with you. I do like that under.
Well, Tim, with the Tennessee-Kentucky game, what's your lean in that?
With Tennessee, I'd be willing to lay 4.5 with them. Wouldn't want to go any further than that, but with the Tennessee squad, I do think that they're going to be out for revenge. Tennessee has been able to do a nice job of guarding the three all season long, except against Kentucky. Against Kentucky, they won a combined 24 of 48 from three-point range in those two games. And I do think that with this Kentucky bunch, they are going to be experiencing a little bit of fall from three because, once again, you're playing this in a converted football stadium with Kentucky. They've been all sorts of banged up in the backcourt as well. I do think that Tennessee is going to be able to bear down. I think that Chance Lanier is the best scorer in this game. And then having Igor Milicic, Felix Apardalmo, I think that they win from within. So, one delay with Tennessee.
Greg Peterson, let the people know where they can find you.
Absolutely. At GUnit_81 on the old Twitter/X. And then I do a pair of podcasts, Coast to Coast Podcast, and the Baseball Betting Show with Greg Peterson. And you can find those wherever you hear podcasts.
Greg, you're the best, man. Thanks as always. We'll talk soon.
Always appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Coming up next, we get to the Ravens, and Jason started to prepare for the draft. He's been talking to some people around the league and got a little bit of an idea of what the Ravens might be looking at in the first round. What is it? We're going to tell you next here on The Fan.
Second and 10, handoff. Judkins, no running room. Derek Harmon closed up the hole.
Yeah, Derek Harmon shows some quickness along with power.
And it's Oregon football. Wow. This ball came out. Harmon comes away with it, ripped it away from Judkins. Take a look right here.
Yeah, he didn't even go for the tackle. He was in the backfield and just went for the football.
NBC with the call, and the reason we play that is Derek Harmon, a defensive tackle from Oregon, who is in this draft. And Jason, you've started to do your draft prep, and you're hearing a lot of buzz about this kid in the Ravens.
A lot of people think he looks like a Raven or looks like a Steeler. You know, some people think they see some Cam Hayward in there. There's a lot of position flexibility. This is a kid who was more of just a sort of gap stuffer at Michigan State. His body wasn't tuned up like it should be. He got recommitted. He got himself in the portal. He got himself to Oregon, actually turned down $2 million from Colorado to take 1.2 to go to Oregon, where he thought he might position himself better to be a first round pick. And I'd be really surprised if this kid isn't a first round pick. And it's probably the back half of the first round. And there'll be, you know, two to three D tackles who go before him who are a little cleaner, I guess you could say, or have a better cumulative body of work. But this kid is got length, he's got power, he's got width, he's got position flexibility. He had some of the best inside pass rush sort of advanced analytics that you're going to find before he got hurt this year. I believe he could be one of those tackles who they just, the Ravens see too much in to let pass. And that even though there might be a corner or a safety who they also like, and there won't be as many corners and safeties that they like available day two, like there will be all these D tackles. I do just wonder if he's someone who's seen as potentially a little too impactful, a little too best of breed to pass on. He's not showing up in a ton of first rounds in mock drafts, but evaluators, I know, think he is absolutely a first round type talent, and it's a name that Ravens fans should probably be familiar with. There's a lot of ways you can get him on the field as you develop him, and he could become a three down impact player for them, and we know how much they value D tackles and D tackles with versatility. I think it could be a really interesting proposition. Our old buddy Bobby DePaul is a big champion of his.
Pete Prisco's got him going 17th in his mock.
Which team is that?
The Bengals.
Yeah, the Bengals need defensive help. Like, you don't think Mike McDonald would maybe be looking at this kid? Like, I know there's people who would say that Seattle needs offensive line, but their GM, John Schneider, likes to take offensive line in the mid rounds. Now, this is not a great offensive line draft, so maybe that changes things. Like, I mean, Howie Roseman is always drafting D-line. I don't think this kid gets out of the first round, whether it's before the Ravens or at the Ravens or slightly after the Ravens. Even Pittsburgh, if they're not taking a quarterback or something. But I think he's going to check a lot of boxes for them and does check a lot of boxes for them. And we don't throw 9,000 names at the wall around here, but that's one that I think you absolutely should keep an eye on if we do get into the 16, 17, 18s and he's still on the board. You know, it could make for some interesting decisions for the Ravens. You'll probably see Malachi Starks mocked to them in a lot of places. Yeah. The safety from Georgia, and some people might say, well, don't they have a Swiss Army knife? And I think they would say you can't have too many Swiss Army knives. And with Chuck Pagano helping us sort this out now, there's plenty of ways where we can get our Darius and Malachi Starks and Kyle Hamilton plus the corners we really like all on the field together. You know, I've talked about, are there going to be multiple linebackers on the field all the time this year? Or are they going to lean even more into their safeties or their defensive backs and, you know, in general and have them fill some of those gaps? And this corner draft is not nearly as good as some recent ones, but that might be a reason why if one's sticking out, you grab them day one, because by the time you come back around day two, you know, it may be even more threadbare. And obviously edge is a position that makes a lot of sense for them too. And one name who I'm keeping a particular eye on is Shamar Stewart of Texas A&M, who you're going to see only 4.5 total sacks next to his name. And, you know, that would obviously create some angst, and we kind of saw that play out with Owe, but I think they have certain things they believe in, and they're going to see a lot of things they like in this kid, and maybe they think they could cultivate him more than they did Owe. I think he could be maybe even more sort of position flexible than Owe. Like, I know Bobby D loves him as well. I got to think if Bobby D loves him as much as I think he does, then, you know, he's probably had a conversation or two with Harbs about that. Like, this kid has the Ravens type body. He has the Ravens type girth. He definitely can set the edge. And there's a lot of projectable pass rush.
Ravens known for their girth.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
I mean, they like, dude, I mean, you think of Terrell Suggs' ass and his thighs. Yeah, like, man. That's what. Wow.
Yes.
I'm
big
just saying,
butt.
Man. They've got a type.
Happy Friday, everybody.
They've got a type.
There you go. Hey, coming up next, you know, it was, the Orioles had themselves a happy Thursday as they took out the whooping sticks on the Blue Jays. We'll recap great days from Adley Rutschman, Cedric Mullins, Tyler O'Neill, and also Zach Eflin. And preview tonight's matchup. It's a hot corner next here on The Fan.
Now the 2-1 pitch to Rutschman is powered deep right field. Roden back at the warning track. That one is way gone. Over the right field bullpen, and the first run for the Orioles this year is a moonshot blast from Adley Rutschman. 1-0 Baltimore in the first. Another 2-2. Swing and a deep drive, and Rutschman has done it again. Two home runs for him, 5 for the Orioles, and they've reached double digits. It's 11-2 for Baltimore.
Blue Jays radio on the call. Allie Rutschman hit two absolute bombs. The only person on the planet that thought those weren't home runs was Bone.
Yeah, Bone called it a pop-up.
Yeah, I thought they were pop-ups.
I was hoping.
Allie also punched that single opposite field, which is the Allie Rutschman of old that we loved watching. He'd sometimes just take what they're giving him and punch a base hit. But two bombs and a base knock, Allie Rutschman looks comfortable.
Absolutely. Great, great day for Adley Rutschman. Perfect way to start the season and a continuation of what we saw in terms of good habits and good discipline and getting back into good form in spring training, which we don't make a whole lot of in general. But I think he and Jackson Holliday, we talked about on the show, really needed to get off to a quality start and kind of shed their skin from what became lost seasons for them. And so far, so good. And if Adley can hit like that when he catches, it's going to open up a lot of lineup possibilities. It's going to really let them float that DH thing. It means good things for their pitchers because I don't think Gary Sanchez is going to be everybody's favorite dude to throw to. I think he's here because he's got right-handed power and he can mash against lefties. So, yes, it's a huge variable in their season, and he's had hot starts before. Let's hope he maintains this. But the backside bleeder with men on base, let that be your calling card.
On opening day, Adley is now 10 for 14 with 3 homers, 9 RBIs, and 2 walks. That doesn't stink.
You know what else doesn't stink? Tyler O'Neill yesterday, who went 3 for 3 with 2 walks and an absolute bomb of an opposite field home run. That boy, he likes playing on opening day.
He's jacked up.
He is. He's
170-pound dumbbells.
Yeah.
225s. He's back in the lineup today. Heston's season debut, we'll have to wait. And after you get on base 4 times and do that, that's how it's going to go.
Five
and he's a good
times.
He's a good five times. He's a good Canadian boy.
Yeah.
Looked good in
good
right
Canadian
field
boy.
Last night. He is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dad's a bodybuilder.
He likes the Tim Hortons coffee, eh?
Yeah.
He brought donuts.
Organization.
Yeah, they over enunciate.
I used to speak better Canadian when I covered hockey. Yeah. Long been a minute. Don't be a hoser, eh?
Yeah.
What
does that mean?
It's a Canadian thing.
Google it.
Yeah.
Hoser.
That was as great like of an opening day as you could ask for.
Yeah, Zach Eflin good.
Was pitch efficient. Yeah. He kept things, you know, one ball got away from him. He kept everything basically on the ground. We know he's not there for punch outs. He's there to get out of innings on, you know, 13 to 15 pitches. And that's what he did. I mean, everything really looked good except for Dominguez.
Yeah. Dominguez fortunate to get out of that inning.
Often used to describe a person of limited intelligence or education.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not good.
You probably don't know. Like, you've never heard of, like, Second City TV.
No, come on.
Like, there's just a whole probably world of pop culture that you've known.
I should leave thing, that guy's striving to be what that was.
He nailed whatever that was because I think You Should Leave is a masterpiece.
I would not go that far.
It is a total masterpiece.
Orioles tonight, 7 o'clock starts.
You know John Candy's Canadian. You don't even know who John Candy is.
No.
I know the name.
Planes, Trains, Automobiles.
Why am I even wasting
my
time?
Trains. I've seen that.
Buck?
No.
I've seen Uncle Buck.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. That's the hokey thing,
no.
right?
Like,
Planes,
Uncle Buck's
Planes, Automobiles. No, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yeah, Uncle Buck was really good. No,
I'm thinking of Airplane.
Airplane's great,
airplane.
Too.
But John Candy's not an airplane.
No, he's not. Hokey. No, it's not.
There probably are a bunch of Canadians in an airplane, though.
Yeah. Periodically, you'll find Canadians on an airplane. I think that's a fair question.
You're not going to find me on an airplane
anymore. No, you will not.
Did you see that last tweet I put in?
Yeah, you love
text?
Putting that in there.
So somebody was on a plane that was landing while another plane was taking off.
Yeah. So do you think, like, never, ever...
Gonna be like it's. What about take if a lot?
What about if one of your children wants to have a destination
Destin,
waiting?
Oh, that's a great question.
Better knock me out. Drop an anvil on my chin.
Xanax.
Lay me in there.
What do we expect from Charlie Morton tonight?
A lot of curveballs. Hopefully, a lot of ground balls. Hopefully, a lot of overeager Blue Jays at bats. I'm glad that. We're going to see some Mateo up the middle at short. Let Jackson go back to second. Let Westy go back to third. I'm not super worried about Charlie Morton, especially not Charlie Morton in March and April. You know, Charlie Morton, 135, 155 innings into the season, pushing age 42, that's a different that maybe is a little different story. But I think Charlie Morton knows what he's doing and he'll be fine.
I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but obviously we don't have a show until then. I think we're all excited to see Sagano on Sunday.
Yeah.
And what that looks like.
Yeah, looking forward to that. He was in our X Factors.
Yeah.
If you missed it, Odyssey app,
yeah,
go back. I know the
point.
People demand
but wait,
the X Factors.
Ben's label in every segment. It's all right there. Yeah, I'm retweeting a lot of it on my Twitter.
Yes.
He's on it.
Go to the Odyssey app. You can hear the whole show. Check it out. We will come back. We'll get the text of the day, get you ready for the weekend, and most importantly, it's Bordy and the Bird and the Bone. I almost called it the Bird.
Bordy and the Bird.
Bordy and the Birds. I would be staying in studio. Yeah. I would blow off.
Nobody's
I'd
leaving.
Say CBS Sports Line and Bordy. Anything going on at home. Sorry.
Unfortunately.
I got to hang out with Bordy and the Bird.
It's Bordy and the Bone. Birch.
That's a rating.
There's potential to get, there's potential now, I think, to have Birds do some BBT.
Yes, I think so.
There would not be conflicts.
No. There'd be zero conflict. Bordy's fired up, man. When I was
Bordy's been here since like 2 o'clock.
He's prepped. He is ready to go.
He's not running in here 3 minutes before Mike's turned on.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. Nobody.
Nothing.
Nobody. He's the opposite of that, though.
Hey, Bordy's here on a Friday, which is more than you could say for most people employed by Odyssey Baltimore.
Yeah, that's good point. One's ever here on a Friday.
It's Oriole Hall of Famer Mike Bordick, and it's the Bone. It's BBT at 6 here on The Fan. Before we get to the text of the day, we have to tell you, Bordy's here, and he's fired up.
So prepped, it's crazy.
Yeah, I just talked to him. He is fired up for BBT.
Well, he's well rested.
Yeah.
It's been a full off season. It's
hibernation.
BBT of the season.
It's opening day for him too.
Yeah, it is. And he's gonna bring it.
He's been sleeping since October.
Because who was it? It was Ryan Ripken yesterday? It's very hard to keep up.
No one was yesterday.
They didn't do
this
one.
This is it.
Right. Because yesterday was up against
day
us.
Yeah.
When Bone called Adley's 440-foot
a pop up. Yeah, too high.
I was hoping.
Yeah, and then it just flew all the way out of the stadium.
Yeah.
Almost landed in the concourse.
Yeah. Ben, let's get the text today.
Check 1-2. Check. Text of the day! Text of the day! Text of the day! Text of the day!
Okay. Text today is sponsored by Oarsman Automotive, driven by OarsmanCars.com. Your trade is always worth more at Oarsman. Shop their entire inventory now at OarsmanCars.com. Text today is an interesting one today. Eric in Baltimore says, time to let that bald fraud go. He always wanted to be about himself and lied when speaking publicly about it. Nova will get tired with this excuses quickly. This week should have been about Derek Queen's game winner and the biggest game for the Terps, but instead it was about that baldy.
Oh,
preach.
Wow.
Man tells no lies.
I cannot argue with any of that.
He does not like bald people.
He is to bald people as I am to billionaires.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Bill Burr.
Yeah.
I like Bill. Bill Burr doesn't like him either. Yeah. And he's bald and he hates billionaires.
Yeah. Wow. That is a nice combo platter. We do have a poll.
Yes.
To pay off before we get up out of here. Maryland men's hoops will endure two ugly departures trying to replace the legend Gary Williams. Mark Turgeon quit on a team around Thanksgiving. Kevin Willard made a public mockery of the school knowing he was going to Nova anyway. Who is a bigger scoundrel?
Good word,
Jason. 700 votes. Willard.
What makes you think I wrote that?
You seem like a scoundrel kind of guy.
Scoundrel is a great word.
Yeah.
Willard is worse, 71.9%. Turgeon is worse, 28.1%.
Yeah, I went Willard because Willard made me care again and then ripped the carpet out from under me. Whereas
Turgeon took the money and ran when it was that season was law. Like that season was
he
going down the drain.
Created apathy. Yeah.
Yes.
And that at least started a reboot.
Yep.
This should have been a continuation. In hindsight, I'm glad he's gone if this is what his true character is. Shame on me for being duped into thinking this actually was for a period of time about the program when it was always just about Willard making the case for leaving and dragging people on the way out. It's a shame. And you guys know how pissed I was about the Turge thing.
Yes. You were very angry.
To think that the new guy would only be here three years and I would hate him more than Turge. I would have said I'd have said with as much as I'm capable of copious amounts of hate.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's
a
lot of hate.
That's too much of an ask for my hate machine. I can't re-engender that much hate in that little bit of time. You're telling me I'm going to hate the bald fraud
Whoa.
More than Tersh. I would have said no way.
By the way, you make the Grinch look like a sweetheart.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also a giver.
Yes, you are very giving.
No, it's true.
You are. By the way,
I'm a giver and a hater. You can be both.
Before we step out, you guys want to hear a bleeps getting real thing? Tomorrow I'm taking engagement photos.
Yay!
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about that, but that's tomorrow.
Can't get out of that?
No.
That's it. There's no escape hatch.
I've yet to be told what I'm wearing.
Well, maybe your cell phone will ring like Tersh at the press conference last night. You'll be like, oh, saved by the call. No. Or Willard. Same difference now.
Yeah.
They're joined at the hip.
Yeah.
Cut from the same cloth.
Coming up next, don't change that dial. It's Baltimore baseball tonight. It's Boardy and the Bone.
No Burge.
We could work on the last. Yeah, we're working on it. We'll talk to you on Monday. Enjoy the weekend.